Well, you're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and we are your true community radio station, and normally you'd be listening to our bumper music, but for some reason this morning our bumper music has decided it's not going to play. We have a great show this morning, and we're going to get right to it in the studio. We have my co-host. Let me see if your mics are working here. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning, Steve.
And then we have back a special guest, Pete Tannen's in the studio. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, guys. It's a delight to be here.
Oh, it's so good to have you back. And we have our underreported news items we're going to get to. Lots of them, some really interesting news today.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's start with brewing. What's going on with brewers?
Well, I know some people, a lot of people maybe have heard of this bill that's cruising through the House in Tallahassee, Florida state bill that would require, now listen to this carefully, craft brewers to use a distributor if they sell more than 2,000 kegs of beer at their own location, okay? Essentially, what they would have to do is sell the beer, and I put that in quotes, to the distributor at one price, and then buy it back from the distributor for a higher price, according to this bill, while, you know, the beer would, like, never move. The bill also, most people know about it because, you know, it would also allow the sale of growlers to 64-ounce containers of beer. Cigar City brewer Joey Redner said that it would force him to move his Tampa operation to Georgia. He estimates that it would cost him an extra $300,000 per year. I mean, apparently he sells about $900,000 worth of beer at his location up there in Ybor City. Totally amazing. No small wonder, the impetus for this bill came from the beer distributors lobby.
Gee, special interest. Well, I have more bad news for your friend there, because snortable alcohol is on the way. Yes, snortable. All right, so there's a few more hurdles before it's going to be in general sale, but Palcohol is powdered alcohol. It'll soon make its way to your liquor store, just about every place. All right, so its motto, take your pal wherever you go. Oh, my God, it's alcohol. Yes, snortable. So it's an alcoholic substance. It's incredibly discreet. It masks the bitter taste of liquor. And, they're worried about underage, well, drinking, I'm not sure is the right word here, but alcohol. It also makes it clear on its website. If you go to the website, yes, you can snort it. On its website, you get drunk almost instantly. This is according to the website, because the alcohol will be absorbed so quickly in your nose. That's what we need. The more quick Jesus. People getting drunk faster in ways that we hard to detect. Let's see. The Alcohol and Tobacco and Tax Trade Bureau have approved the powder. It's been approved. This is powdered alcohol that's snorted on its way. Wow.
Unbelievable.
All right, so speaking of drugs and stuff, tell me about Mountain Dew school? What?
A Brevard County Elementary School. Well, yeah? They stopped doing it, but they were for about a decade giving students, this is elementary school now, a shot of Mountain Dew and a handful of trail mix before they took their FCAT tests. You know, apparently the practice had been going on for a while until, you know, one mom noticed it and probably thought that the 10-year-olds shouldn't be really drinking Mountain Dew in school. Now they'll just get water with their trail mix. You know, frankly, Steve, I didn't know Mountain Dew was listed as a performance-enhancing drug.
There you go. And, there was a time when we reported where they were banning sodas from schools, too.
Yes.
They took taking out some of the machines, et cetera.
Oh, Mountain Dew is, like, nasty stuff. I mean, I'm not a big soda guy, but I've seen the effect it has on, like, youngsters. If you want a kid to be unruly, give them a bottle of Mountain Dew.
All right, so the next thing I'm going to report is actually four stories pushed into one story, and you guys are going to help me, Lou and Pete, okay, we're going to go net neutrality here, and it's complicated. If I read this story, it would take the entire hour, so I'm just going to summarize what's going on. So first of all, and you guys can help me out with this yesterday, net neutrality died when the FCC announced new rules about the Internet. This happens yesterday. So a program director at Common Cause, who's been on our
show,
said, you know, consumers are the are the losers here. Left-leaning public interest and lobby groups, the sites they rely on daily basis may not work in the way they've come to rely on. Of course, the FCC says they're not going to harm internet users, etc. This goes on and on. Before I go on to, I'm going to link this to Netflix, Netflix to HBO, and then HBO to Amazon.com, and then we're going to do a story on Amazon.com. Before I leave the net neutrality, any comments, Pete, about the net neutrality? It just came out. We're sort of digesting this, the new rules.
What I heard, can I hear myself on this?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm turning you up here.
What I heard basically was a fabulous description of this. They said it's like on the highways where you have an HOV lane where people who can afford to pay a high toll zip through, and the rest of us are stuck on the slow lanes in heavy traffic.
Nice analogy. Thank you. All right. So what's going on here is that this – let me get to this here. Okay. So we have – net neutrality rules, and now Netflix is becoming a cable provider. So this is a linked story because Netflix is also affected by this. And out in San Francisco, we have a agreement with Atlantic Broadband, RCN Telecom, and Grand Communications gives Netflix subscribers service on a channel on their TiVo boxes that the three cable services provide to their customers. This is breakthrough. We have Netflix, your internet streaming, now becoming a internet provider of content here, and this will debut next week on Monday. All right, so this is a part of a big war that's going on. We've been reporting straight along between Comcast and Netflix and Netflix. Okay, so the other player here is HBO. Now, HBO is afraid of Netflix because Netflix and their streaming could compete with HBO and their streaming.
Sure.
Okay? So in the middle of this is The Sopranos and The Wire, which are shows by HBO, and they want to stream them.
That's right.
So where do they go? Not Netflix, because that's their competitor. So they go to Amazon Prime, which is one of the competitors for Netflix, right?
Like most confused consumers, I think I'm going to sign up with the first one of these outfits that provide coffee.
Or Mountain Dew, maybe.
Well, you know, Steve, you know.
I'm not done here. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, my big question is you know, and you know me. I mean, I love movies. But how many movies can one consumer watch in a week?
All right, but I'm not done here, so we got to get to Amazon, too. So here's a quote here. HBO fears Netflix growing industry power. We suspect HBO wanted to balance Netflix growing media industry by helping to bolster their largest direct consumer competitor, and that was Amazon. Okay, our other story is about Amazon. And the real Amazon drones, we've been talking about Amazon delivery service, are the drivers. And I'm just going to tell you a real quick story about one of the drivers. The way it works is they have these not employees, but these independent contractors who are doing their deliveries for Amazon. You ever wonder why your Amazon packages or Amazon Prime comes so fast? Not always through the regular mail. They have independent contractors. So here's the story. Your independent contractor, you could pay $1.50 for every address you deliver. And in a typical day, you can do about 150 boxes, which is fairly routine. You can get paid about $200, maybe $2.25 for a day's work. Okay. The problem is that there's a lot of out-of-pocket costs. Since this is an independent contractor, his insurance isn't going to get paid. He's not paid for the gas or the wear and tear on his car, the auto insurance, all that stuff, parking tickets he gets because he's going downtown, and he doesn't get reimbursed for the uniform that he's required to wear. He has to buy his own uniform and wear it, or else he can't do it. So at the end of the day, basically, he's not making much money. Most of the money has vanished. So the point here is the Amazon drones are not planes flying in the air. There's people who are getting paid like nothing.
Now, correct me here, but I think Wall Street is still waiting on Amazon to make a profit after all these years?
Well, I don't know about that. Okay.
No. I think Amazon.
Is that true?
I think Amazon has.
Oh, they turned the corner.
Has posted profit. Oh yeah, Amazon's posted profit.
Well, good.
I mean, I don't know how creative the accounting is, but all I know is Jeff Bezos does have more money than God, and I don't think anybody just gave it to him.
And he's an interesting character himself. All right, so we're going to continue to talk about the internet and media. It's one of our favorite subjects, and also for the ACLU. And Pete Tannen is the president of the ACLU. He's in the studio with us, and we're going to talk to him about a new film coming up in a minute. But we have some more underpinned. We love reporting graphene news.
I just love this story. I love graphene stories, and every time they come up, I try to report them. A new ultracapacitor made from graphene and a nanotube combo is smaller and cheaper than modern technology. Researchers have created a high-functioning yet cheap ultracapacitor that is made from two, now get this, one-atom-thick materials. That's
wow.
One-atom-thick. The research team mixed graphene flakes with single-walled carbon nanotubes to create a groundbreaking device. And this was reported, I guess, in the American Institute of Physics news release. Ultracapacitors are energy storage devices that can create surges by rapidly releasing power. By combining the power, the energy density of batteries, and the high power density of capacitors, the ultracapacitor can provide a boost to devices such as electric vehicles, handheld electronics, audio systems, and more. And now, keep that in mind, because another research team...
Oh, can I just comment just a little?
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
The capacitors tend to take up a little room. They basically can convert... they can used to be convert AC to DC.
Right.
And they're basically what you do is you put energy into the capacitor. It holds it sort of like a battery.
Sure.
And you can get it out again. They're not as efficient as batteries.
Right,
but
that's right.
They're used in, of course, many of our electronic devices.
But that's the whole point of these. I mean, they're nano.
They're more powerful.
You know, I mean, they're two atom sticks deep. You can put them in a lot of places.
Pretty small.
And now, graphene, the wonder material, all right, can be made with a kitchen blender. Scientists have outlined how they managed to make the wonder material graphene, you know, in your kitchen. It is, in fact, a thin, strong, flexible, electrically conductive, and has the potential to transform electronics as well as other technologies. An Irish UK team poured graphite powder used in pencil leads into a blender, then added water and dishwashing liquid, mixing it at high speed. Okay, because of the potential uses in the industry, the number of the researchers have been searching for ways to make defect-free graphene in large amounts. You know, though they do say that you probably shouldn't try to do this at home. You can have problems.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
I don't think it's going to explode. But apparently, just regular kitchen blenders, the blades turn fast enough to like separate the graphite. Basically, the graphite is in like the pencil lead and turn it into the flakes. These other guys we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is just it boggles the mind. You know, I mean.
This is extraordinary. I mean, it's another use for a kitchen appliance you would never think of.
Never expect. That's right. And just think how many things you could use a one-atom thick sheet of graphene to fix around the house.
Unbelievable.
It sounds better than duct tape.
All right, some surreal stuff here, stuff you wouldn't expect, or I don't know, maybe you would, but a Ku Klux Klan former leader was caught with a black hooker. All right, so we have authorities uncovered details. So there's the Ku Klux Klan former leader, Fraser Glenn Miller. He's accused of killing three people this month at a Jewish community center in Kansas. Well, in 86 in Raleigh, North Carolina, he was caught mid-act with a male black prostitute dressed as a woman. I love these just surreal stories.
Just, you know, and speaking of other surreal stories right along these lines, you know, this isn't underreported, but Cleveland Bundy, the Utah rancher, you know, who has been, you know, illegally grazing his cattle on federal land for 20 years and had all the militias and guys, you know, when the feds came to take his 500 head of cattle away from him to pay the roughly $1 million that he owed the federal government, you know, got great support earlier this week, of course, from our friends at Fox News, and even Rand Paul pointed out that he's just another example of how federal overreach, you know, was hurting regular citizens. Well, they've all kind of backed off their support, you know, after his racist statements. I mean, this guy, by the way, Steve, if you listen to him, he sounds eerily familiar to the Birchers Claire Connor talked about last week. You know, how federal government is the big evil and that black people were better off during slavery. He actually said that this is a bad thing. Young black men don't even know how to pick cotton these days.
Did he really say
that? He actually said that. I mean, this guy was like, it was like totally amazing. John Stewart's all over it, I have to say. And it's like pretty damn amusing.
Wow. You know, damn. All right, I'm going to do a little segue story so we can get to Pete Tannen. And I'm going to do this by saying the Arkansas law Arkansas judge struck down a state's voter ID law. And this happened yesterday. It said it violated the state's constitution by adding a requirement that voters must meet before casting a ballot. The Judge Fox voided the measure in a lawsuit over the way absentee ballots were handled under the law. A separate lawsuit had been filed directly challenging the law, which required voters to show photo identification before casting a ballot. And the judge said the law is declared void and unenforceable. All right, so the ACLU, we have in the studio here an award-winning writer and president of the ACLU, Pete Tannen, comments about voter ID laws, and then we're going to talk about your film.
You know, the thing that always got me about all these voter ID laws coming down from Tallahassee is that the previous officials of the Republican Party are on record as saying there's no fraud. There's no fraud whatsoever.
You know, that's right, Pete. You know, and I personally think they should just cut to the chase and make it you're not entitled to vote unless you're a registered Republican.
You know, what does one say? We've been fighting this for decades. We made some progress under Charlie Crist, and now with Rick Scott, it's painful. And particularly the area of getting felons their rights back. We are one of the two states that is... We're the worst in the United States. I mean, there are close to a million felons who don't have their rights back. And the way the law exists now is that if you have you're caught with some marijuana, you've stolen something, whatever, you've done time, you get out of jail, it takes 5 years before you can even apply to get your rights back under this governor. 5 years. If you have committed a more significant felony, it can take 7 years, and in some cases you have to have your case judged by a clemency panel. On the clemency panel are the governor, the attorney general, and the head of the Department of Agriculture. Don't ask.
I'm certain that the paper trail is fairly copious. You know,
we've helped more people try to negotiate this. Yeah. The bottom line, though, is that this panel meets 4 days a year for 8 hours a day,
and
that's it. And if they give the rights back to 75 or 100 felons a year out of the roughly 1.1 million who are waiting for their rights, that's all they do. It's embarrassing to this state.
Okay,
but let's talk.
The reason why you're on, you are sponsoring a film right here at Fogartyville, which is attached to WSLR. Yes,
well,
so start by giving us the details, then we'll go into the...
Okay, first of all, it's not just the ACLU. It's with the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, the Peace and Education Center here, the Center for Religious Tolerance, the Humanists of Sarasota Bay. There is an award-winning film. It won a special jury award at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's called The Revisionaries. And what is it about? Okay, fans, it's all about Texas. and it's about the Texas Board of Education. Now, if you were going to elect a citizen to run the Board of Education to determine what is put in textbooks, would you elect a dentist whose strict interpretation of the Bible holds that the earth was created less than 10,000 years ago and whose only education experience is teaching Sunday school?
I want to go to that dentist for my dental work. Who doesn't believe in science?
His
is the world still flat?
Yeah, he was chair of the Texas Board of Education for 2 years. And this documentary, which is phenomenal, talks about how he attempts to change what is in the textbooks. Now, why this is significant and important for the rest of us is that Texas is the second largest purchaser of textbooks in the country. So if you're a publisher and you want to sell to the Texas market, you've got to kind of go along with some of this stuff. Otherwise, a big part of your sales will vanish. So they've had incredible power over what kids all over this country read. And it's just
outside of Texas.
Outside of Texas.
Yes.
Outside of Texas. And basically, this documentary is absolutely phenomenal. By the way, it is free. It is this Tuesday night, no charge. Please come get angry with the rest of us.
Yeah.
And that's right here. This is 525 Kumquat in Sarasota.
It's off 6th Street between Lemon and Orange. And it's at 6 p.m. this coming Tuesday. Everybody is welcome. We expect to have a big crowd, so come on over early. And
lots of good sponsors.
Lots of good sponsors. And basically,
are you going to have a question and answer with that? Do you know?
You know, it's basically being run by Americans United. I hope they will. Mm-hmm. I haven't really talked about this, but it'd be great to have one afterwards.
Yes, because you'll have quite a good crowd there. I'm sure we can get some comments by the crowd.
Can I ask you, Pete? Have you screened this yet? Have you seen this film?
No, I have not. I've seen the trailers. I've gone through the IMDb stuff online.
Okay.
And Tribeca is a very, very demanding film festival, and if this won an award there,
oh, I'm sure it did. I mean, I just wanted to find out if you had any like sort of highlights we could like tease the crowd with about you know, some of the stuff this guy tried to, you know, specific stuff he tried to get into textbooks.
I remember two things. Number one, that it was the Earth was created in 6,000 years, and what is this evolution garbage? And dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark along with Noah and two of every... Oh, yeah, well, how do you explain that?
Well, he apparently didn't see the movie.
Must have been a big arc.
And the other thing that his group has been trying to do is shift things around to make it appear that the success and the brilliance of the United States from the beginning came from unfettered free enterprise.
Okay.
And apparently... there are some of the founding fathers who didn't believe this, who have not been mentioned in this textbook now.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's. Well. See. Yeah. See. That was kind of the thing. Kind of the thing that I was getting at. And that's a very interesting, you know, point that they're trying to bring out, because as you brought out earlier, because Texas is such a large market, and textbook publishers have to sort of kowtow to, you know, this sort of view. You know, it's just yet another example of how the quote-unquote, you know, invisible hand of the market is so bloody efficient and working so well. You know, it's just, it's like, oh, okay, all right, you know, because there is a big market and people are going to buy lots of books, we'll just fill them full of lies that they want to hear so we can sell a lot of books. And, oh yeah, the rest of you people who are relying on this
is for information.
As actual information. Well, you know, All right.
Somebody told me that part of the problem is if you graduate from a Texas high school and then want to go to university and other places, and this is what you've been fed, you have a huge disadvantage because you're getting out into the real world. And you really think, or some of these students really think, that the Earth was created 6,000 years ago and dinosaurs existed at the same time as Noah. And you're going, what a shock for these kids. Getting out into the real world and hearing an opposing point of view, which is
really
healthy.
Oh, you know, I mean, that's got to be, you know, obviously a huge disadvantage not to be, you know, clued into basically the cultural lexicon. I mean, you don't even get half the jokes.
And, you know, we interview a lot of candidates for local offices here. We had some in as recently, I'm not going to go into some details, who had similar views in terms of God created everything. Mm-hmm. And the comment was that, I know this is true. Well, mm-hmm. So I asked the question, well, what about the people you're going to represent in your district who don't maybe know that that's true, and how are you going to handle that? That question was kind of ducked, actually, when I asked that question.
Yeah.
I got attacked personally.
Yeah.
There is a not flexible part of this attitude where this is the way it is. I know it's true. and go and sort of an attack anybody else who doesn't believe that. If you don't believe it's true, then there's something wrong with you, and now I'm going to attack personally because you don't know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That and then if we combine that with elected officials, and one of them was in here recently running for office here, mm-hmm. and we're going to have him back again.
Sure.
And maybe we want to ask him some more questions about that. But I just wonder if we get those people in elected office, then that same thing that's happening in our schools. Well, Pete, what happens next?
You know what happens next? There is light at the end of the tunnel, and as far as I'm concerned, my daughter-in-law was recently working for the LA School Board, and what they have done starting next year is they have a contract with Apple, and every child, 600,000 kids in the LA School District, will receive an Apple iPad. This is mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen now is the publishers will be free to send what California wants to California, and you know it's going to be all about.
Yeah.
But it's going to take.
Let you know, just one second.
Yeah,
I just deleted something there from our. I just don't like that word on my show. So just repeat what you said.
That's right,
without
yeah.
using that word, I'm just very sensitive.
Sorry, Steve.
On my show. Sorry.
Basically, science will out.
Yeah, there you go.
Et cetera, and you can get a textbook on an iPad downloaded by your school system. They can say, no, we don't agree that the world was formed 6,000 years ago. Thank you very much. Here is what scientists say. Here's what they say about global warming. Here's what they say about a million things. And there's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, so. We are humanity itself in serious trouble unless truth does prevail. I mean, and that's in a lot of areas, and that's, I guess, what a lot of us fight for.
Steve, the difference, what you were saying is someone sits there and says to you, oh, I know this is true. That's the end of the discussion. Someone
right.
else says, I have a theory here, and it's so-and-so, such and such, the theory. And it's out there, and any one of the million scientists or ordinary people can say, you know, I tried that, and the theory doesn't work. Instead, this works, and that's what science is. We keep modifying things and going along and getting better. If you are believing in one thing and there's no room for outside discussion, you're in trouble long term.
I agree. I think process is more important than details. And if we have a good process where information is checked and people say their opinions and what's facts, that works,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to this is the truth, which is, or this is a goal, or this is the way it is, which, you know, I'm a process person. All right,
yeah.
Speaking of process, Flag Day is coming up.
June 14th.
All right, so we did this last year at Five Points Park, which was a lot of fun, and you had the color guard there. So tell us what's going on June 14th, and who's involved?
Basically two groups. The ACLU partners with a wonderful group in town, Florida Veterans for Common Sense.
Yes, we love them.
They're terrific. And we are getting together. It is totally nonpartisan, folks. It's Saturday, June 14th, Five Points Park. There will be music. We have the cooperation of an honor guard from the city of Sarasota Police Department, from the sheriff's office, from the veterans groups. We will have music. We will have booths. And speaking of booths, if you or your organization wants to give out information, you know, nothing for sale, we would be happy to have you join us. I mean, people like the Herald Tribune. There will be several nonpartisan groups registering voters, including if you're 16 or 17 years old, there is a way you can pre-register for the election in November. And we'll have somebody there talking about that.
Cool.
Which is terrific.
Great.
Absolutely. Okay, this is a nonpartisan celebration of the flag and the values it stands for. We have things in common, and we're asking everybody. This is the third year we've been doing this, and we simply ask everybody to come on down, have some fun, and just honor the values of the flag and the values of our Constitution. This is not, us against them. It's not one group against another. We're all Americans. We all essentially believe the same stuff. let's honor our flag and our veterans.
And one of the things I think that's so interesting, and let me just remind people, because we're coming up at half past the hour, you're listening to WSLR. This is 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. If you're looking for your local community radio station, this is it. You're not going to find another one. All the program here is produced locally. Actually, we do have some stuff that comes from other places, but most of it locally here. And this is the Surreal News, your weapon of mass instruction. And in the studio, we have Pete Tannen, who's the president of the ACLU. And one of the things I like about sort of the Flag Day is that the flag has a lot of connotations and a lot of political connotations over the years. And it seems like a few years ago, the flag meant you were a Republican. and they sort of stole the flag. The Republican Party kind of stole the flag. And then the Democrats sort of fought it back, and we had Obama with his pen, and everybody was criticized. Oh, God, what's going on with the flag?
It went into play as a symbol of I'm more patriotic than you are, and that's garbage. That's garbage.
It's a bumper sticker mentality,
of
right?
Of course.
Let's solve everything through bumper stickers.
I'm also a member of the Florida Vets, having been in the military, and I have to tell you something. We're Republicans. We're Democrats. We're out to honor these folks, to honor the flag, and I don't care where you're coming from. This is not a day for argument. This is a day to come together and say, you know what? Let the politicians, stand up on stages with 75 flags behind each of them from whatever party you stand for.
Right.
We don't care. Let's just get it back where it belongs. It represents all of us.
How did we get to the point where sort of, I'm more patriotic than you. I can wave a bigger and faster flag than you.
Yeah.
How did we get there? I mean, it just seems so surreal to me.
One of our board members pointed this out several years ago, Dr. Mark Magenheim. And Mark said, I am tired of somebody in particular with a particular point of view owning my flag. We're all as patriotic as the next guy. We may have different ideas.
That's right.
Of how to solve our problem. But for goodness sakes, let's all, get together and celebrate the values that we all have in common. And that's the point of this whole thing.
So we got the color guard marching here.
You've got color guards. You have...
And they're also going to march through the downtown flea market, you said, or something, too?
It's Saturday. Right? It's the market.
Down in
Florida. It's our downtown farmers market. So... yeah, we'll march there. There are free flags. Everybody who shows up will get a free American flag. We'll have hundreds of them. And
there are going to be some, right? There are going to be some speeches, too? A few speeches about
Well, one of the things I promised everyone who's coming is a minimum of political speeches. Although traditionally there's a proclamation issued by the city or the county in honor of Flag Day. Read by one of the members, and we don't care what their political affiliation is. And the speeches will last 5 minutes. Last year we had the magicians come there, which were wonderful. I'm going to talking to them, see if they come back. Plus we had giant bubbles. I mean, just bring your kids.
Yes.
There were chalk drawings of American flags that the kids could do. It was just a great atmosphere.
Yeah. And you had mentioned earlier there's going to be a guy on a horse who's Thomas Paine.
We're trying
to do that. We don't know if we're going to
Thomas
get that
Paine is one of the Florida vets. And
Thomas Paine is one of the Florida.
Yeah, he
vets.
Dresses up in
nice.
Colonial costume.
Costumes.
And I'm looking around for a horse to have him ride through.
Is he going to be Thomas Paine? Is he going to talk about common sense?
He talks about common sense. He quotes from the works of Thomas Paine.
Awesome.
And he's terrific. And we're going to have a troubadour singing songs.
Okay.
And it's just kind of cool. So come on down and have some fun. Wave a flag around for an hour and join us. As I said, everybody is welcome. We don't care what you believe as long as you line up behind the flag and say, we're all in this together, folks.
All right. Okay. Yeah, Pete, we have maybe 2 or 3 minutes left here. Can we get to stand down and bust card?
Okay. Quickly, one of the things the ACLU does for free is hand out a special little wallet-sized card. We call it a bust card, and it's titled What to Do If You Stop by the Police. Very common sense stuff. We have it in English. We have it in Spanish. Stuff you want to read, think carefully about your words, movement, or body language. Don't get into an argument with the police. Remember that anything you say or do can be used against you. Keep your hands where the officer can see them. Basic common sense stuff. You can get this for free by downloading it. Go to aclusarasota.org. And there it is on the page. Click one link for Spanish, one for English, and print it out, and you got it. And so we're delighted to provide that. It's common sense stuff, but a lot of people often forget it.
You know what, Pete? I think that would be a great thing that every young man under the age of 30 should have in his wallet, because here in Florida, especially under the age of 25, and while, of course, it's a lot more prevalent with black young men, but even white young men, if you're a young man in Florida, you're basically targeted by law enforcement. They assume you're doing something wrong.
I know. The other thing it covers is what to do when the police knock on your door and want to come in your house.
That's right.
You have rights, folks.
Yeah,
and they're all in this card, ACLU, Sarasota.org. Download it. Now, tomorrow from 8 o'clock to noon, the Florida vets are having a stand-down. A stand-down came from Vietnam, where some of the frontline troops were allowed to go back to a safe area and have 48 hours to sleep comfortably, to get a haircut, to get checked by a doctor, to get new gear and all that kind of stuff. So they have it for veterans. It's going to be at the Sarasota County Health Department on Ringling Boulevard. If you're a vet and you want to come down there, there are legal services to help you access VA benefits, housing assistance, counseling and substance abuse referrals. There's always a van from the VA that shows up with blankets, with whatever. We never know what's going to be in there. There are legal services, haircuts, styling, not just we've had some women vets who came down there, and it's hairstyling, and it's employment services. So the Florida Vets for Common Sense really put this together, along with the city of Sarasota, the county, Florida Health, the Manatee Technical Institute, the Salvation Army, the All Faiths Food Bank, Jewish Family Services, Goodwill, et cetera, et cetera. It's a big event, so if you are a vet or you know a vet, please, if you're a vet, bring along your VA card or your form DD-214. You know what that is. And come on down. All these folks are there to help you. It's tomorrow. Sarasota County Health Department starts at 8 a.m. and goes till noon. And they're there to help you guys and you women out.
That sounds like a list of the guests on this show when you started reading some of the sponsors there. Almost all those people have been on this show, and they're welcome to come back. All right. We're going to switch gears now and talk to Sam Daly Harris. You're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, your true community radio station. This is the Cerulean News, your weapon of mass instruction. And my co-host, Lou, is going to introduce Sam. Let me just also tell you that Sam has been listening to the show on the internet, so he's
great.
Also been there. So good morning, Sam.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Okay. In 1980, Sam Daly Harris founded Results, an international citizens lobby dedicated to creating political will to end poverty. In 1995, Daly Harris founded the Microcredit Summit Campaign, which surpassed its initial goal of reaching 100 million of the world's poorest families with microloans in 2007. In 2012, Daly Harris launched the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation to help organizations more deeply engage their supporters and create champions in Congress and the media in their cause. Now, the 20th anniversary edition of his book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, is available. Welcome, Sam. High praise indeed. And I know if I went through the list of people, you know, who, you know, like what you've been doing, you know, we'd take the whole 20 minutes. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, if I could, like, there are three main points in the book that kind of lay out what this thing is about.
Yeah. I was hoping you would get to those.
Yeah, and so point one is that most people feel hopeless or cynical, or both, about making a difference with their voice as a citizen. That's number one. Number two, I've seen for 34 years people make a profound difference with government on things they care about. And point three, and this is a toughie, if you want to move over from hopeless and cynical, the third point is you have to find an organization that does more than keep you in kindergarten and first grade as an activist. In other words, an organization that provides a structure of support, a curriculum, a rich curriculum, and helps you have some breakthroughs that go way beyond just some mouse clicks. So that's our, in a sense, our predicament. I know one of the groups I've been coaching recently, the Peace Alliance, was a guest on your show some weeks ago, and that's an example of a group that's trying to put in this kind of deeper structure of support and a richer curriculum, because most groups offer a pretty thin gruel to their members when it comes to being activists.
Okay, what are some of the websites you have come up with, and what are some of the things that how do they address these challenges?
Okay, well, so one of the groups that I founded is Results of Working on Global and Domestic Poverty, and results.org is its website, and I'll tell you the commonality with all of these in a moment. Another is the Peace Alliance, peacealliance.org. Another is Citizens Climate Lobby, and citizensclimatelobby.org, and this is a group that's 6.5 years old. It didn't exist 6.5 years ago. And last year, their volunteers in the U.S. and Canada had 1,265 letters to the editor published. They had 248 op-eds published. They had 709 meetings with members of Congress or their staff. So this is way beyond the mouse click. And what's common through all these groups is, for example, they'll have a conference call once a month with hundreds of people on the phone together and guest speakers. I mean, the Citizens Climate Lobby might have a Jim Hansen and others like that. Results on Poverty might have Jeff Sachs or Paul Farmer from Partners in Health. And the Peace Alliance, they've only been having their conference calls since November. They'd have, like, Congressman Bobby Scott from Virginia, who introduced the bill that they're working on, which is a Youth Promise Act, which is to get violence prevention funding and programs in communities all around the country. But so that's one piece, is this conference call. The guest speaker is not the only bit, but that's one piece of it. And another piece is that the leaders of the groups around the country meet once a week together for coaching calls kind of stuff. So it's really, you don't get 1,200 letters to the editor published last year by luck or, a really a basic educational program. You have to get something deeper.
It sounds to me like, essentially one of the most important tools all these websites have in common is trying to teach people how to have actually, face time with their legislators and influence government, how regular people not named Coke can influence government for the good
right.
of everybody,
right.
Navigating that system, because I understand completely when you say, it's like hopeless, you see something happening in government, you say, well, how can I get my senator or my house rep, to vote the way I think it's right? Just one voice, I'm just one vote. He's not going to listen to me. But
let me give you a great story about that.
Yeah.
There's this woman, she's written up in one of the new chapters of the book. Her name is Ellie Sparks, and she lives in the Richmond, Virginia area. And she said, when I joined Citizen Climate Lobby, I was suffering from climate trauma. I would read Bill McKibben's book, Earth, and I would weep at home, and I would weep at work. But then I joined Citizen Climate Lobby, but the point is, she tells this story. I was on their conference call 2 years ago, February, and Amory Lovins was the conference call guest. And when he finished, she came on and she said, "You are our executive director." There are hundreds of people on the phone with her. She said, "You told us that we're betting the farm on relationships. Now go get a relationship with your member of Congress." And she said, "Well, we're in Richmond. Our member of Congress is House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. And we couldn't get a meeting with Cantor, but we got a meeting with his legislative director." She said, "Four of us decided to go, and we had two-hour preparatory meetings. And one of the four of us is a retired naval meteorologist. He brought more of the science. Another is an executive coach. He helped us with the agendas." He said, "Another of the four of us is Fred, and Fred is Jewish, and the congressman's Jewish, and Fred's known for his baking. So he baked two challah breads, one for the congressman and one for the ledge director." And they went into this meeting, and they had a flip chart they brought with them, and they asked, "What are the congressman's values on the area of energy, economy, and environment?" And they would write his responses on the flip chart. She said at the end of the meeting, the ledge director, whom they've met 10 times since then, the eighth time was with Cantor, I assume the 11th in June, will be again with Cantor as they have their conference in D.C., the ledge director said, "You're the most prepared group I have ever met with." It was their first meeting. So I told this story to the heads of CARE, Save the Children, Oxfam, and I said, you know,